we're back with Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. I'm here today with Peter Garland, who's the Executive Director of the State Board of Education. Dr. Peter Garland, excuse me. And Peter is the most well-versed person I have ever met in Harrisburg with regard to everything that exists in the Board of Education. If you want to know anything that's happening in Harrisburg, you need to call Peter. By the way, his phone number again is 717-787-3787. That's 717-787-3787. Or you can get him on the website at www.pde.psu.edu. If you have any questions about any of our programs or if you'd like a tape of our broadcast, you can call us at 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Now, Peter, let's get back to a little bit about what we were talking about. You and I know a lot about how things operate at state and federal capital levels, and that lobbyists have a tremendous amount of impact on legislation. Special interest groups, that's how we got this, as we were talking about earlier, this handicap legislation. It was a small minority of children that we were talking about who managed to, are now being funded billions of dollars. How can citizens and parents be heard like these lobbyists? I mean, they don't have millions of dollars to pour into campaigns and things of that nature, and which is, you know, the way sometimes it works in Harrisburg.
Harrisburg and every other state and national capital.
Yeah, exactly.
The beauty of the democratic process. I would say what parents can bring to it, and it's just as powerful as lots of professional staff and or monies that can be spread around, is parents represent real votes at the grassroots level. And I don't think as I've watched groups of parents, even sometimes small groups, working with their local legislators, can have some great sway in the process. And certainly, I don't know a legislator in Pennsylvania that if you said I'm representing, there's 10 or 15 parents, and we want to come down and talk about how we think things are going in the schools in your district, that a local legislator is not going to take that appointment and talk seriously about some of those concerns, because those parents represent hundreds of voters in his or her district. And I think that's forgotten sometimes in the process, that even with some simple organization, parents really can get the ear of legislators or other officials in the administration. You know, it doesn't have to be large amounts of money or the ability to wine and dine. It can sometimes be the simplest influence in the process, which is just we're the people that elected you to office, and we've got some problems with how things are going, and we want you to hear us. They have, I'd say, anytime I'm over in the Capitol, there's almost always groups of parents and citizens visiting their local legislators and talking about some of those issues, and those find their way into the public policy discussions. Especially if your local legislator is one who has an affinity for and a background in education, and many of the legislators do.
How many people are there? How many legislators are there in the chair committee?
First of all, Pennsylvania is a fairly large legislature to start with, 253 members, 203 in the House and 50 in the Senate. By definition, or just simply because of those numbers, the Senate Committee on Education is much smaller than the House Committee on Education. I didn't know this was going to be a civics test, Daria. I can't know the exact numbers on each.
No, that's okay. We'll be having legislators on.
Yeah, there are about 30 legislators on the House Education Committee, so it is quite large. And I think it's closer to 8 to 10 in the Senate committees.
Now, I'm sure that on the State Board of Education, there are people represented from all the different areas, from kindergarten, elementary, preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, and higher ed, and vocational, and handicap. How can you possibly appease every single faction that it comes into you? And what this is leading to is my real question is, do we need to simplify government, and how do we do that?
Oh boy, that sounds like a fun topic. Let me start with the first one. First of all, I think the board members themselves, as well as myself, don't view this as a process of who do you appease or who comes in with the greatest, I guess, power or strength as they walk in here. And part of the reason I really enjoy working with the board is their ability to say, to cut to the issue, which is what is this doing either for or against kids? How is this going to help a teacher teach kids? How is this going to enable a kid to demonstrate their achievement better? And I think they've been very good over the years at keeping that level of that focus in there. That doesn't mean that there isn't good information coming out of some of the professional associations and their lobbyists and the views they would have towards the world, but I think the board has generally over time tried to figure out what makes sense for kids. And I think that's, first of all, in any of this process, it's the first and last question that has to be asked at all times. And it can be lost. It's very easy for it to be lost in a political environment where people are oftentimes more concerned about whether they win their point rather than whether it does anything to help kids.
Well, that was another one of my questions. Since you have 17 members appointed mm-hmm. by the governor, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. To a six-year term. I didn't clarify. To a six-year term.
To a six-year term, which supersedes the governor.
Right. In most cases, certainly in that most people will last into the next administration that are currently on the board because of how the appointments are made. So, and that's by design, not just in this state, but in most states. And that comes from a belief around the country, I think, that matters of education and changing education policy needs to be very thoughtful and deliberate, and as much as possible, and you can never exclude it entirely, as much as possible removed from day-to-day politics.
And so that precludes their being the right arm of whoever is the standing governor or secretary of education at the time, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's designed to be that way. I mean, some states elect their boards, and some states are appointed, but in most cases, they have a fairly long term of office so that the changes in education need to be thoughtful and not quick and draconian.
Except for the chair of the House and the Senate who are elected.
Right.
And those are, and by virtue of the way that they are now set up, is what I am understanding, is if you become chair of the Education Committee in the House, for example, you're there for life until you're voted out of office. Is that correct?
That seems to be how it's been running in the past few years, and similarly in the Senate. I think in most legislative bodies, once you get to be chair of the committee, it's sort of yours to give up.
Now, does that hinder progress by having the same people in there for long periods of time, or does that, in your opinion, create stability? Let's talk about the Board of Ed.
Sure. It on the positive side, it gives you great stability, history, and thought. We had a board member who about a year ago left after serving for 18 years. He'd been a school superintendent for 20-some years, involved throughout Pennsylvania in education, Dr. Earl Horton. And Earl had been on there a long time, had history and understanding of how we got to where we got to, and did that in sort of an unedited way. He just, this is the way it happened. And that helped to ground the understanding, of, particularly of new board members, as to what, how change occurs in education and what's a good way to change and sometimes what's a bad way to change. On the other hand, and I haven't seen it recently, you can end up, and it doesn't matter whether it's the State Board of Education or legislative chairs or others, people, all of us, any of us can become entrenched, can become stale in our ideas, can think we've searched out all the questions and now we have all the answers. We don't necessarily need to go any further with that. As I've watched the board operate, it's simply there's enough new blood that comes on the board and new secretaries and deputy secretaries in the department that there's always a good discussion of ideas and a balancing act between does the status quo make sense versus do we want to take a leap of faith and move into something different. But any given day, that can certainly fall to status quo is more important than anything else, given the nature of longer terms of office and the realities, as you said, in the General Assembly of individuals being in those seats for life.
Is it good that change happens so slowly at the Department of Education? Now, I'm thinking of things in terms of, let's just say, right now, technology changes every 18 months, and yet education doesn't seem to keep pace with the changes we have in the marketplace. Is that a good thing or not?
I would say, just looking, and my background is more in higher ed than K through 12, and college and universities have been sort of one of the most stable social institutions other than the church, and it has worked very well, I think, for them and for society that they have been slow to change and deliberate and thoughtful and all of that. But I think I would probably agree with you that the pace of change has become so rapid, not just in technology, but in virtually everything technology touches, that you wonder whether these wonderful, deliberative, stable bodies have the capacity to really seize the opportunities of change and move as quickly as it is necessary in this environment to make those changes.
Do you have any answers for us?
I think part of it is that I think that we need to, as many kind of stable industries have done, have sort of found ways to promote pockets of entrepreneurial thinking within them that can begin to lead the organization or pull the organization towards a better understanding of change. I think if we all sit in the typical structures that we've built for education or for government, it's going to be unusual for some real kind of change-oriented vision to emerge and lead. So I think if we look to some of the more stable industrial entities in this country who over the past 15 or 20 years have found ways to create within themselves pockets of entrepreneurialism.
And research attests
to that. Oh, yeah,
that
goes hand in hand.
Research attests to what you just said, because we know that things that when change occurs, it has to do with something that's very unusual that develops a long track record, and that is how, and others see that, and that is how change takes place. And
also, I don't think we can trust that change will happen in these entities without some impetus or incentive from outside. Again, my background in higher ed, the major changes in higher ed over the past 200 years in American history have generally come from outside. The Land Grant Act that said colleges shouldn't just be for the elite, they need to be able to teach practical skills for people in their real lives. The GI Bill that brought millions of people and types of people that would never come into education before. And similarly, the great expansion in the 60s, quite frankly, was done not to create more college opportunity for people as much as it was done with what you do with a baby boom generation. They're going to crush the economy if they all try to run for jobs at the same moment. So many of the things that we've done that have made higher ed strong in America have come from strong impetus outside the academy. And I think the same is probably true in most of the changes that have or can be happening in K through 12 education.
There's a real impetus with the current administration, the presidential administration, for everyone to attend college. And it is my personal belief that everyone is not college material. I think we've taken a dramatic leap here.
Right.
We went from 100 years ago, when only 15% of the population went to college or institutions of higher learning, and now we're trying to create students as lifelong learners going to college throughout their entire lives. And I'm not sure that we're sending the appropriate message to people that, you know, we're pressuring the students to continue throughout all of their life to attend school and go to school. And are we actually expanding adolescence and diverting people from becoming adults?
A couple thoughts on that. First of all, I probably agree with you in that if we think of college as sort of traditional baccalaureate education, we probably have no real need to expand the numbers that are pursuing that. But that, again, related to technology, we probably need, all of us, need some kind of post-secondary education, probably in the technologies, in order to be viable members of the workforce. And if so much of us, so much of our jobs are related to technology that, as you said, changes every 18 months, there's going to have to be some level of lifelong learning in there. But that probably does not mean get a baccalaureate degree, go back and get a master's. It probably means shorter periods of time, more skill-oriented, for all parties in the process to upgrade their skills and to continue to be in there. But for every student to think that the only ticket now is to move into baccalaureate education is probably not thoughtful enough. The board did a series of conversations with education business leaders several years back on the notion of post-secondary and technical education. And we worked with Bob Samsky at the University of Pennsylvania, who at the time was the director of the National Center for the Educational Quality of the Workforce. And he had done some of these on a national level, too. And the striking finding for us was, exactly as you said, Daria, that there's sort of this extended adolescent going on in American society, whether you're in the workforce after high school or whether you go to college. That in Bob's research and conversation with business leaders, there's sort of this, no one really commits to a career or a career track and gets serious about it until about the age of 28.
That's correct.
And there's very little difference between someone who gets out of high school at 18 and kind of knocks around in a variety of jobs, or the individual who goes to college and thinks about working for a year or two, maybe going back for a master's degree, et cetera. But we sort of have built into this environment that you don't need to get serious and commit until about 28.
That's correct.
And there's 10 years.
And what has happened is we spend billions of dollars, and I know this from personal experience, business owners spend billions of dollars training and retraining people who opt to leave after 6 months of training.
It's exactly.
Because they don't.
We kept hearing stories of the, you know, bright, capable person, but all of a sudden it got warm and sunny and they decided they'd much rather spend the summer at the Jersey Shore, or they'd earned enough money to put the down payment on the car, so full-time employment or overtime they didn't want to bother with for a while. I mean, and that's frightening. I mean, you know, the wonderful thing about the American economy is that we've been able to incorporate a lot of sloppiness and still succeed. But I think
yeah,
increasing
long
numbers of people are worried that level of loss in the years leading up to when a person commits to a career or several different careers as they might evolve is potentially a real problem for this society and this economy.
Well, I tend to agree with you, having gone through three secretaries in a matter of a year, so, and training them to do the volume of work that we do in our company, and then having them leave after you've spent all that time training them is just utterly such a waste of time.
Yeah.
And it's more and more of our youth population we're experiencing this, and it's I don't know where we're going to go with it. What are the biggest issues that policymakers are wrestling with?
I would say, I mean, we've already touched on some of them. special ed funding is a big concern in the General Assembly and with the administration and certainly with local school boards. And I'm not sure where that's going to come out. I think we'll be wrestling with that one for some time. The issue of post-secondary education and technical education, workforce development, we're doing a variety of things at the state level, but I think there's probably a lot more to do. Closer to the heart of education, I think and I'm kind of excited about it, that the greatest focus seems to be in improving education seems to be on the quality of teachers. And I think it's something that most of the ed reform agenda has always led you back to, and most of the research has led you back to after 20 years, is it's critically important who is it that's in front of that classroom, how they're supported, how they continue to develop as professionals, and how they actually are able to help students achieve and learn.
Unfortunately, your teacher training program hasn't changed in 100 years in this state, has it?
And I was going to say, and we got a lot of work to do. I mean, we like most states, I mean, we have a very traditional system of preparing teachers. There are certainly some pockets where some faculty and deans and working with local schools are getting a lot more creative about the kinds of things they can do and the kinds of skills they can arm teachers with. But it's still a slowly evolving process. I think we in Pennsylvania may be coming to it later than some other states, but that you know, how students achieve in the classroom is related to the skills that teachers bring, and that if one sort of, and we did a major study with funded by some of the Pittsburgh foundations to look at how teachers were hired in the state, and it's kind of frightening. You know, most teachers go back and work in the district or a neighboring district from which they came, that a majority of teachers in a school district come from one or two teacher preparation institutions. They don't have that wonderful mix of ideas and experiences, that individuals, after about their third or fourth year of teaching, if they decided to commit to the profession, sort of stay in that district for the rest of their lives. There's just a lot of back to that stability question, there's an awful lot of stability that is not all bad, but needs to be mixed with a healthy dose of creative, new, and challenging ideas. And we haven't built that into our preparation or, frankly, our hiring process in local school districts yet.
What is your opinion, and this is you personally, of course, and not necessarily referring to the State Board of Education, what is your opinion about the public education for the next century? Are we about to change and decline and turn into something different, or will public education still exist?
I guess in coming from someone who studied a lot of Jefferson back in college, and I guess I fundamentally believe that a quality public education system is essential for a democracy. Having said that, the current structure of public education, I think, is being challenged on all fronts. Public charter schools are certainly helping in communities to begin to think outside the box and think of new ways of structuring and delivering education as part of the public system. I think a whole variety of, and you're aware of these more than I am, of ways that you build and construct schools, about how you organize those schools into learning communities, different ways in which teachers, you know, move outside of their classroom and work with one another and work with different groups and patterns of students in the process, how students begin to learn beyond the walls of the classroom and beyond the walls of the school in the community, so they have a better understanding and a better grounding of issues and problems and ideas. I think some of the organizing themes that are different than the traditional textbook curricula that help people learn and explore in a very different way and take advantage of the learning styles they bring. All that is going on. Is it enough yet? Probably not. Is it going to eventually reshape public ed? I believe so.
Well, you're going to be reading an article that was written by one of the legislators who went with me to New York last week, who I couldn't get out of the building at the end of the day because he was so excited about these concepts that he anticipated in the beginning to be something very much out of the box and non-traditional and very relaxed atmosphere. And he assumed, made an assumption before he arrived, that that kind of an atmosphere led to disrespect and students who didn't care about learning. And he found the exact opposite. As a matter of fact, there were several ninth graders who challenged him to a debate and knew more, as he said in his words, than any college student he knew. So we have to really look at a different way of teaching students, and what we are promoting, as you know, is depth rather than breadth, which is what most of our schools are doing. And I don't know if we can really jump to something so dramatically different as quickly as is needed in our schools today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think so, but I think that's a tough one. There's a lot of the inertia of the status quo is an incredible thing.
Now, for anyone who's listening, we are speaking today with Dr. Peter Garland, who's Executive Director of the State Board of Education, and you can call him at 717-787-3787. That's 717-787-3787. Gosh, with all those sevens, we should go play the lottery.
Right.
It's a good thing it's an easy number to pronounce. Or you can reach him on his website at www.pde.psu.edu. That's www.pde.psu.edu. You can reach us here at Children Come First at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PRO-KIDS. And I want to take these last few minutes, if you will, Peter, and sum up for us whatever it is that you'd like to tell our listeners regarding how they can become involved in their own in the process of this legislative policy.
Let me suggest one place to become involved, and it's probably a little more local, but a way that you can find some information is that in this state, as well as most, with states making a requirement for report cards on progress and profiles of what schools look like, at the same website where you could reach me, you can find information about every school building, as well as school district in Pennsylvania, and find out the kinds of things that are going on there in terms of range and type of programs, teachers, test score results, achievement results, class sizes, etc. I mean, gone are the days where the best information you got on schools was from a local real estate agent. I think this gives you a much richer understanding of who's doing what kinds of things and what are some of the strengths and weaknesses. And frankly, I think arms parents with comparative information to go to their school board and say, the neighboring district does this or is able to achieve this. Why is it different here? What can we do to change that?
And where and what kinds of things would you suggest that our listening audience do in terms of, I mean, I know we get many calls from many citizens who listen to our program on various issues, from drugging our children, from Ritalin and all those, the psychological issues, to mundane kinds of day-to-day issues on busing and things of that nature. Undoubtedly, it's probably at the local level that you should go. And from the local level, then the next step would be to the Department of Education and you at the State Board of Education?
Yeah, we can, I mean, if on all of those, if you haven't gotten a satisfactory answer at the local level or you're not certain and you want to check out, you can call our office and we'll either handle it or transfer you to some offices in the department that have that information that you can find out more about what's going on any of those issues.
And we encourage our listeners to become educated on the things that are the kinds of things that are available throughout the state, because as I have traveled through the state, as Peter knows, from the east to the west to the north to the south, I have discovered the diversity in the number of people who don't know even the things that exist within their own state, the resources and the kinds of things. I mean, I've had phone calls from principals asking me where they can purchase computers, to parents asking me questions about the kinds of resources that might be available to their community. There are many, many things available, and it is up to you, the constituents, to try and motivate your school district if they aren't going in that direction, and they need to hear from you. And I think that's Peter's message today. If I'm incorrect in that, please correct me.
No, they need to hear from you, and we need to hear from you. Otherwise, it's too easy for it to become business as usual.
So my suggestion is to please give your local school district a call, whether you're a senior citizen or a parent or a community business leader. If you have ideas that you think the Board of Education or legislators need to know about, or your own personal school district, please become involved and become involved in the policies and the regulations that affect education, because it is from you that changes occur. And for the most part, as Peter said, sometimes we become complacent when we're in a job from day to day and year to year, and we get involved in the daily operations and the mundane kinds of things and forget about the real needs of the community. So we encourage you again to please become involved. You can reach us toll-free, 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PRO-KIDS. Or you can reach Peter Garland again. His phone number is 717-787-3787. That's 717-787-3787. Or go to his website at www.pde.psu.edu. That's www.pde.psu.edu. And Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Anytime.
And as I said, Peter is extraordinarily knowledgeable. If you have the opportunity, give him a call, get on his mailing list, and go to the meetings down at the Department of Education.
Oh, and we also move around the state as much as we can, too.
And participate in his roundtable discussions and have conversations with him. Join us again next week for Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski from 10 to 11 a.m. Have a wonderful week. Thank you.